Hey friends, did you know that you can come hang out with me in real life? That's right. The Work In Podcast and Savage Grace Coaching makes its home in a boutique studio space called The Loft Yoga and Wellness in historic downtown Spring Valley, Ohio. This hidden gem of the Miami Valley is nestled in between Dayton, Columbus, and Cincinnati. As a part of my mission to bring a legacy of resilience through movement, each month you can join me for a hike on the bike trail, followed by a free trauma-informed vinyasa class back at the studio on Main Street. Go to savagegracecoaching.com to see the calendar and join my newsletter, A Yoga Life on Main Street, to stay up to date on all the latest studio news, events, and gossip. And now, on to this week's episode. It's time to stop working out and start working in. You found the Work In Podcast for fitpreneurs and their health-conscious clients. This podcast is for resilient wellness professionals who want to expand their professional credibility, shake off stress, and thrive in a burnout-proof career, with conversations on the fitness industry, movement, nutrition, sleep, mindset, nervous system health, yoga, business, and so much more. I'm your host, Erica Thomas. I'm a resilience coach and fitpreneur offering an authentic, actionable, realistic approach to personal and professional balance for coaches in any format. The Work In is brought to you by Savage Grace Coaching, bringing resilience through movement, action, and accountability. Private sessions, small groups, and corporate presentations are available now. Visit savagegracecoaching.com to schedule a call and get all the details. Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to The Work In. Trauma-informed yoga builds smart bodies and smart kids. Science is telling us that our interoception, our somatosensory sixth sense, is important in being able to focus, learn, and recover from all forms of stress. Children who are chronically scared, hungry, tired, and neglected will find ways to adapt to those feelings, and not in ways that are conducive to learning. The body has an innate intelligence that our current education system ignores in favor of sitting still and staying on task. But if we can harness the developmental connections of movement, memory, and emotion, we can help our kids calm their nervous system in order to feel safe no matter where they are. And strong, emotionally resilient children grow up to be strong, emotionally resilient adults. And that's our Work In today. I recently got to take a 2-day trauma-informed kids yoga workshop. And in the preparation for that, I was a little hesitant because I mostly work with adults. And sometimes kids can be a little scary. So I wasn't sure how valuable it would turn out to be. But all training that is focused on kids is valuable for all adults. And just a reminder to other instructors and teachers of all kinds of things, the training that you take is really more for you than it is for those you serve. As you, as the individual first and the teacher second, have to filter and alchemize the experience before you can share it. It's not really about how many poses you know how to do or your magical cueing words. It's about you, your personal experience, and how you show up. So even if we don't have kids ourselves, if we don't ever intend to be parents, or that kids you do have are already grown up, or you don't ever intend to teach kids, all of us were once children. And for the adults in our rooms, Many of them are there trying to process their own childhood traumas. So in my most recent training, I learned that understanding kids' yoga through a trauma-informed lens and somatosensory tools could be the key to the mental health and chronic disease crisis in this country. Actually, not could be. It is the key. In the mid-90s, in 95 to 97, the ACE studies that were done by Kaiser Permanente showed us that adverse childhood events, or ACEs, things like divorce, having a family member with substance use disorder, or a parent with mental illness, can have a long-lasting effect on our physical health that may not show up until middle age. Something like 44 different health diagnoses are correlated with an elevated ACE score, including cardiovascular disease, autoimmune diseases, diabetes, increased risk of stroke, and cancer. And these were present even without the lifestyle habits that we typically associate with them. So in the show notes today, you will find a link to Nadine Burke's TED Talk on this very thing. And there will be a link to the Adverse Childhood Events questionnaire that you can take if you'd like. It's just a 10-question questionnaire, super quick, just to see where you fall in that conversation. Now, the original ACE study that was done in 95 was a data that was collected from 17,000 plus HMO members in Southern California. So they completed these confidential surveys regarding their childhood experiences and their current health status and behaviors. And what was found in that study was that over two-thirds of them had an ACE score of more than one, of one or more, I should say, of one or more, and that 20% or one in five of them had an ACE score of four or higher. And what that tells us is that even if we have, quote unquote, gotten over our childhood, the things that happened to us through our childhood, we can still be feeling the echoes or the ripples of its effects physically, mentally, and emotionally. The tools that we practice in trauma-informed yoga and tap into the somatosensory connections between the brain and the body can help calm and sort of re-educate the body's map. Because even in the most well-adjusted, stable homes, none of us escape childhood without some adversity, without some traumatic experiences. It is not really in the events themselves. It's in how we have processed or maybe not processed them. And when I'm talking about adversity and traumatic experiences, that doesn't necessarily mean those experiences are coming from someone else. They could be self-induced. So when I was 6 years old or seven, something like that, somewhere around that age, I don't remember exactly, I tried to fly off the top of the slide on my swing set. And I was just certain that with some happy little thoughts, I could jump into the air like Peter Pan. It did not go well, and I belly flopped right down on the ground. I was a little younger than that, actually, maybe closer to 4 or 5, when a boy in my kindergarten class stabbed me in the face with a stick on the playground. I still have the scars from that. And then there's the medical moments of trauma wherein I was held down at the doctor's office for allergy testing. So none of those things are what we would normally consider abusive or neglectful. They're not my parents' fault. They are just like normal things that happen to kids as they're growing up, right? That was just kindergarten and first grade. I could go on and on, and I'm sure you could too. But I mention those things because for me, they were things that I had kind of forgotten about. I didn't place any value on them. They were things that were that are part of my history, but that I didn't see as a problem until they came up in some trauma release work I was doing. And just because I didn't put a lot of value on those stories didn't mean that my body didn't see them as a problem, as a traumatic experience, because my body had still been holding on to tension around it. And this is really why it matters, because as an adult, we create stories and meaning around why we are the way we are, who we are, and how we got that way. But our conscious stories don't always match the body's reactive stories. And that's why it can feel so baffling when we feel anxious and panicky in certain situations that don't seem like they should be that scary. And if we haven't learned how to be curious and open to those sensations in the body, we can't pause and notice it before it overwhelms our system. We're going to be at the mercy of our nervous system and the emotional dysregulation that goes with it. Now, kids are naturally dysregulated. They aren't born knowing how to name the sensations in their bodies. They learn how to get what they need first by crying and then with language. And how we respond as parents or caregivers, how we respond or don't respond to our infants and children affects their brain development. It really does. And prolonged neglect in particular has a profound effect on the size of a child's brain, especially in areas that are responsible for memory, learning, and behavior. So if you need a daily dose of depression, Google the Romanian orphans and you will see that in real life. Those children in those Romanian orphanages, they don't cry. They don't cry because they have learned that crying gets nothing. No one comes. And so they have stopped. And what you can see physically, just by looking at some of these kids, is that their skull has not filled out because their brain, areas of their brain have just physically not developed. They're smaller. And it's a sad, sad, sad thing. Our tiny humans need healthy connections to other people. And they need to learn healthy connections within themselves. We can, through this greater understanding of the brain, somatosensory connections, and the nervous system, give our kids a better whole body education. Yes, we all need to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic in school. But in order to be able to learn, we need to help our kids into a state that allows that to happen. And we can do that through the body. Now, our teachers need more support in this area for themselves and for their classrooms, for sure. We cannot have a dysregulated adult in a room and expect the children in that room to learn safe self-regulation. It just doesn't work that way. Our education system needs a bit of an overhaul in that respect. And parents also need to be more educated so they can create a home environment that sets their kids up for success. I wish I'd known half of the things I know now when my kiddos were little, for sure. And there isn't a quick fix for any of this. Even one small shift, though, can create a ripple effect that could change the whole world one kid at a time, or one kid's whole world? So what might that look like? Well, teaching kids how to channel the energy in their body physically can make a huge difference. Now, children do this naturally when they are given the space, right? Running, jumping, moving, whatever it is, when they're frustrated or angry. I mean, just think about the child that throws the temper tantrum and drops to the ground and kicks and screams and pounds the ground, right? That is the child's way of releasing that energetic charge out into the world. So it's not inside the body anymore. So in our schools and with our children, in how we deal with them, we need to resist the temptation to use restricting movement or isolation or cutting recess as some kind of punishment, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but I do remember in school, if people were in trouble, they would get held inside and they weren't allowed to go out and play for recess. And I think that's exactly the opposite of what these kids need to do in order to be able to come back and sit still. We need to give them the opportunity to release that charge. Teaching kids then how to handle the physical sensations of fear and nervousness and anxiety that comes up in the body using breathing techniques and, changing how we think about that awareness of those sensations in the body. For example, befriending their butterflies, right? And maybe restricting social media access or access to the internet because, and this is just my opinion, but having unrestricted access to the internet and social media, it's like being raised in a carnival house of mirrors. We get all kinds of false perceptions of reality out of that. And so it can confuse the understanding and awareness of what kids are feeling within their body. Also, we can start to teach kids how to show themselves self-care and self-compassion with everyday things. Things as simple as what they eat as a way to take care of themselves. And then, of course, self-affirmations. And then teaching kids how to name the sensations that they are feeling in the body. Because all these sensations, these physical sensations, they all turn into some kind of emotion, right? We name them, and we need to teach our children how to name what they're feeling, how to claim it, how to tame it, and to reframe that idea that that sensation in your stomach when you're nervous about standing up to do show and tell, that that's normal. And we can make those butterflies fly in formation, right? We can use that energy as a positive stress, as eustress, right? As something positive and that can help us be successful. Kids need to be taught those things. They don't naturally come to them. And then finally, teaching kids how to set boundaries for themselves and for others in order to build some of that self-trust that gets lost when we stop believing the sensations that are coming up in the body. When we lose that self-trust, that can lead to all kinds of confusion within that somatosensory cortex. This is a lifelong skill, and it addresses, in childhood, it addresses bullying on both sides of the behavior. Our teachers need this too, this setting boundaries skill. And so now I know that some of this stuff sounds maybe beyond what we're capable of as a society. Maybe it sounds stupid or woo-woo for a certain generation of parents. After all, we all survived, right? We all survived our childhoods. Maybe it sounds like too much effort to add in a school day, or maybe it sounds too expensive or even a luxury, especially in some of our inner city schools. And I get it. I get it. But the truth is that no kid is going to be able to sit still and learn anything for 8 hours a day if everything inside of him or her is screaming that it is not safe to be there. And that doesn't matter what age that child is. That is across the board. So if we want better for our kids, for ourselves too, better education outcomes, better mental health outcomes, better long-term physical health, we need to start here with our children. Somatic movement and resilience training can be woven into how we teach. It doesn't really take that much effort. What it does take is a simple awareness and a new understanding of those things. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard today, if you want to learn more and check out our show notes with some of those links, head over to savagegracecoaching.com, /thework in. There's all kinds of free resilience resources there. And of course, you'll find the links from today's show and other episodes of the Work In podcast. Thanks for joining me today. And I will see you all next time on the Work In.